Special programming tomorrow, special programming on Friday. We will not be on location this Friday. We will the following Friday. Everything will be back to normal. We are just, you know, taking the day after Thanksgiving off, 4-day weekend. But there will be, it's best of programming both days. Is that correct over there?
Yes, sir.
All right. We got the best of programming. Now, author of the week usually is tomorrow, and usually we just, you know, would have special programming, and so we would not have our author of the week. However, there's author of the week that is going to be doing a book signing at ABC Books on North Glenstone, just south of Kearney. And so I thought, well, I don't want to miss the opportunity to have him in studio. And I love the subject matter as well. Mark McNeely, Change for the Poor, A Guide to Restoring Lives with Those in Material and Relational Poverty. One, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely appreciate it. So if you would, you and I were talking a bit off air. You're from Springfield for the vast majority of your life, essentially your whole life. So if you would tell people a little bit about who you are, your background.
Sure. Yeah, I grew up in a just middle-class family and pursuing the American dream and you know, pleasure, and went to school. But then I dropped out of school to start a business and was wildly successful at that, made money. And
nice.
But I had a couple from my teenage years into my 30s, a couple of addictions that just completely wrecked my relational life and burned through two marriages and really caused issues in my family and close relationships. And all of that came to a head in 2008 when, you know, whenever you have addictions and you've got these two lives that you're living and the darkness, you know, eventually comes out into the light. And so I had that moment, ended up in a Christian counselor's office, and I came to, I was not a believer, didn't grow up in the church or anything like that. And so I had a Road to Damascus experience, if any, you know, familiar with that.
Well, and I was going to ask, because this is instrumental to this, the book here.
Mm-hmm.
What was there an instance or a moment, or what was it that made you decide, okay, I want to change?
Mm-hmm. Really, and it is that way, sadly, for a lot of people in addiction, just the consequences. Mm-hmm. You know, as many bridges that I had burned, mm-hmm. and as much pain as I was experiencing, right. and loss, and it just got to a point where in that Christian counselor's office, yeah. I was done. I was done, right. living that old life and mm-hmm. doing things my way. And so that was,
I always wonder, and I don't think there's an answer to this, but sorry if I wander a bit, but I find this component to human nature fascinating. And I'm a firm believer. That's why I asked that mm-hmm. question. With all the efforts oftentimes, you know, and a lot of it's legal to force people to change, mm-hmm. that until that every person makes the decision, mm-hmm. okay, I want to. I mean, that's it. That's the key to it. And some
right.
people, though, they just never get there. And
right.
I never really, I don't know that there is an answer why some people do what happens to where they're like, okay. And I right. there are a number of people very close in my life that have, you know, made that decision,
right.
and have been on
their lives.
Totally transformed
right.
their lives. And that's the one thing that's consistent. It was an internal decision that
sure.
was made. It wasn't a judge ordering any sort of counseling.
No.
It wasn't. Now, that isn't to say that there aren't times that during those periods of perhaps forced this or forced that internal decision is made. But that's ultimately
right.
the key.
Yeah, boundaries can be put in mm-hmm. place mm-hmm. by people in your life. Obviously, external consequences. Mm-hmm. But, and I think biblically as well as just empirically, you can just look at transformation in a human life. And
yeah.
there's some mystery in it.
Yeah.
I mean, you just, there's no set yeah. formula, you know. A plus B equals
yeah,
C when it comes to that.
Yeah, as interesting as it may be to try to think and evaluate, I do.
Yeah.
I think at times we do all forget there's some things we just don't know,
right.
and we'll never know.
Yeah.
Until perhaps
right.
you know, we leave from this life and into heaven.
Certainly.
For those of us that, you know, make
right.
it.
Or believers.
Yeah, believers.
Right.
So tell us about the book, your decision to write mm-hmm. it, and what it's about.
Absolutely. So after I got saved in 2008, and I left the business world within 2 years, and I was on staff at a church here in Springfield, and I began just doing normal church ministry staff kind of things until it became just painfully obvious that I needed to be doing outreach, reaching out to people in addiction, coming out of jail and prison. And what I really grew fond of, I started a outreach service, a meal and worship service for people in recovery housing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people know this as transitional housing, sober living. It's referred to in different ways, but people that live in group homes for accountability, security, structure, and all of this, and a lot of times they're stipulated by the courts, but this outreach service was ministering to folks in recovery housing, and it was just an amazing season, 2012 to 2017, and grew in my understanding of how that worked and what didn't work, and got the opportunity to meet the leadership at Victory Mission. And there was a position open there for their long-term programming. And all of the stuff that I was learning from the church staff perspective, I then got an opportunity to put in place. You know, kind of a, I'm an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. I'm a starter, you know, because I started a church, I was starting businesses. And I'm like, if I had my program, if I had a program, right, this is what I would do.
This is the way it ought to be.
You know, God with his sense of humor in 2017 was like, okay, well, you know, here's a program. Yeah. See what you're going to do with it. And there are three principles that I found are necessary to help someone out of what the book refers to as extreme poverty. I used on the cover material and relational poverty because a lot of times when people hear poverty, they think financial, right? Mm-hmm. Material possessions. Yeah. But what you see whenever somebody needs a program like ours is the poverty is much deeper than that. You know, it's relational, it's social, it's just, it's so multifaceted. Yeah. And so what the book walks through really is three principles that I feel are necessary to bring a life out of total destitution and brokenness and into, you know, we have people graduating our program that are buying houses, starting businesses, reconciling with families, men that are getting full custody of their kids, just these incredible, you know, how does that happen? And sadly, the church and government agencies and services will, you know, throw some money, pay an electric bill, get some counseling, put the kids in after school care. All of those things are good. And in the book, I contrast relief with restoration. There is a time and a place to, you know, feed that person, to clothe that person. At Victory Mission, I'm not involved in the side of the ministry, but, you know, we have shelter, you know, food, shelter, clothes. But what the heart of Victory is really to move people from cycles of need, right, into a life of restoration, really. Yeah. And so the book walks through those three principles are relationship, that's primary, and then structure. Which I had to learn because I grew up in a middle-class family. People that come out of generational poverty or they grew up with a tremendous amount of abuse and neglect, and if they have trauma, dropped out of school, a lot of the life skills that most people grow up, they just simply don't have. Right. And so a 24/7 type of structure in the early stages of helping somebody restore their life is crucial. So structure and then accountability. And accountability is the tough one, honestly, because once you grow into building that emotional connection with somebody, the implementation of discipline or even the removal from your program or your process is, it's gut-wrenching, but...
Well, and that is, you hear all the different versions of love, but I think that is one of them, that difficulty of the accountability. It's not, and it's, as a parent or as a friend or you know, anyone that is in a relationship with someone else, and that is hard. I think it's one of the reasons that generationally we do have a lot of problems culturally is because that sort of love is not the sort of love that a lot of younger parents oftentimes utilize because it's too hard. They want to be friends. It's easier to be friends, than, you know, to allow your child to learn lessons the hard way or to discipline your child. That's not fun.
Right.
And so that is a specific type of love.
And the difficult thing, which I go into in the Motivated by Compassion chapter number one, is that when you're a caregiver, when you are reaching into the life of somebody that's deeply broken, your need to be needed is toxic. So when you don't allow people in your, whether you're a parent to a child or whether you're a caregiver to somebody that's coming out of jail or prison, like a program like ours, you rescuing them from consequences or you not administering the corrective, you know, action that needs to be taken is more about you than it is about them. And really people are just, and I'm not saying I'm not guilty of this,
sure,
but we're just protecting ourselves from an uncomfortable situation and to hurt someone that we love.
What do you? And you're obviously not here, or somebody that wants to, you know, say, well, that's the wrong way. That's the wrong way. But I think sometimes it does help the compare and contrast mm-hmm. between what works and what doesn't work. Mm-hmm. What do you see as one of the biggest and honest, genuine mistakes that people make in trying to, quote, help others?
Help others, yeah. I would say the, and this is the biggest hurdle to jump, and it's not taking the time to build the relationship. Mm-hmm. Because you really, only through relationship can you find out what some of those underlying causes, you know, because hunger, not paying an electric mm-hmm. bill, one going from one relationship to the next, getting involved in, you know, criminal mm-hmm. charges. And I mean, those are symptoms, right?
Yeah.
And so the only way to really get underneath what's happening in the external brokenness of the person's life that you're helping is to build a relationship. And honestly, mm-hmm. the reason that doesn't get done in like large scale in organizations or individuals is it takes time.
Right.
And it's messy. Mm-hmm. It's extremely messy. But one of the things that we find and the restoration program at Victory, which is, you know, the ministry at the church I refer to quite a bit in the book, but I also refer to the program at Victory, is just the incalculable amount of hours that it takes over our 12 to 18 month program to take a person from right off the bus from prison to, again, buying homes, yeah. starting businesses, reconciling with family. And so did that answer your question?
Yeah, no, it absolutely did. And I find there was this interview that was done forever and a day ago. I didn't see it at the time, but I'm a weirdo, and so I look up the weirdest things on mm-hmm. YouTube, and one of them was when Ayn Rand was on with Phil Donahue.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he was kind of this lefty guy, I always thought he did a real good job of asking real inquisitive questions and questions that, you know, he thought, well, they were probing. Mm-hmm. And she was very big into, hey, you serve yourself and everybody wins. And she would talk about taking care of her husband, and Phil mm-hmm. Donahue, he was mentioning, you know, the fact that, well, but isn't that contrary to your devotion to selfishness of taking mm-hmm. care of yourself? And she said, no, because I get pleasure out of helping him. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that was very interesting. I think, though, that can be detrimental, because oftentimes it's almost a quick fix for mm-hmm. people. They will, quote, help in a way that is actually making them feel good.
Exactly.
And it doesn't actually do anything meaningful long term for the person they're helping. And that's a little, I think maybe that poison you were talking about.
Yeah, unfortunately, it can be harmful.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things individuals can get from Change for the Poor, which is available for only 99 cents mm-hmm. on Amazon, or on Kindle, sorry. Mm-hmm. The paperback's $11.99, but there's a promotion for 99 cents on Kindle if you got any Kindle readers out there. But I think for a lot of people, they've got to, again, I cover this in the first chapter, they've really got to come to grips with what is your motivation? And are you willing to see beyond that money mm-hmm. or whatever aid or help that you're giving to how it's actually impacting or not impacting that person? I outline a story in the book of being walking inside a neighborhood market, and there's this woman talking to the homeless guy, you know, who was asking for money. And I walked up, and, you know, because I'm the director of restoration mm-hmm. at Victory Mission, right? I'm going to scoop in here and try to assess the situation. and, you know, she's listening to his story. Come to find out that he and his wife are transient. You know, mm-hmm. they really just want to find out what services are available mm-hmm. and they're moving on. That's common. And so she gave him $20 cash, and I kind of followed her into the neighborhood market, and I said, ma'am, you know, I work at a shelter.
Boy,
I work
in she only knew
poverty alleviation, and I just wanted to share. I don't want to question your motives, but that could actually have been harmful.
Right.
And you know what she told me? How dare you rob me of my blessing?
Boy, if that doesn't.
I mean, does that not capture that? So what you're telling me is that $20 wasn't about him at all.
It was for her, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so I think people who want to help those in poverty, they do have to dig into their own motives and ask, is my helping actually helping?
Well, and this is what I think is sort of the big secret. For people who do these easy, charitable, you know, efforts in order to make themselves feel good. That feeling is absolutely nothing in comparison to the feeling that a person can get if they really, truly do help someone. Mm-hmm. So in other words, whatever feeling you have by giving somebody a 20,
mm-hmm.
that is so minuscule compared to working with someone for 18 months like you do.
That's right.
That you meet them when they get off the bus from prison, and the 18 months later, they are signing for their own home because they have a job. Mm-hmm. That is a good addiction,
absolutely.
I would say.
It is. And I would probably have to admit I'm addicted to that.
Well, and you almost at times, I imagine, wonder, gosh, it feels so good. Right. And it's nothing, you can't compare that to any other feeling, I don't think. If you've ever been in that position before, that you almost kind of, gosh, is it wrong that I'm so happy about it? Mm-hmm. But I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I love watching these men and women just completely transformed, and the people in their life that knew them before, they're unrecognizable to them, and they're finally living out their dreams. We have a woman in the program right now that is a gearhead, you know, which is, you know, not to be... gender thing, but it's
sure.
unique. It's unique.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. And she's extremely skilled with it, but she's been in and out of jail and prison so many times. She's never been able to pursue that. She's graduating our Jobs for Life class, and she's having her second interview to start an apprenticeship in a master mechanic role.
And talk about the residual impact, because here when you are facilitating somebody getting on that right track, you know, how many people are they going to touch because of their life story?
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, and that, you know, just doubles and doubles and doubles. And
it breaks cycles.
Yeah. And I think it, and you know, of all the time, you know, we get schools invite speakers, and and we tend to gravitate in those decision-making processes of finding these speakers of these inspirational stories. Those are the people that need to be brought to the schools. Mm-hmm. Those are those who have really overcome those odds and show that it doesn't matter where you are in life, that you can put yourself in a better place. And we just overlook that so often. I think it's unfortunate.
Yeah, because if you're successful and you had the incredible amount of resources and an amazing, awesome.
Right.
I mean, we should celebrate
that. Well, sure, because you didn't blow it. Right. You know, you didn't, and people in those positions do
and
often.
That's good, and people are impacted by your life, and I'm not going to take anything away from that, but when you have the, you know, the basement to the penthouse story, it's...
Yeah, well, sure, and to me, it's the same thing. You go to the gym. I don't know if I've ever seen the inside of one, but you know, our instinct is you see the fit person and you're like, man, that's really admirable. But then, you know, you have some individual in there that's 500 pounds and just miserable. And I'm like, no, that's the, I mean, I'm not taking away anything from the fit person, but that's the person that you ought to be like, wow, I'm inspired by that person, because it is so hard for them to do that.
And, absolutely. And walk into that environment. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, Liz, any final thoughts? I know the book signing's coming up Saturday.
ABC Books.
If ever there's a book signing or an author, I would recommend people come out and see. It would be you at ABC Books. 10 to 1, you said?
10 to 1. Okay. I think just in closing, I would say this book is excellent for people who work in this type of service or ministry in an organization, church. I think it's tailor-made for them. But you and I's conversation really points to this book as helpful for somebody that wants to understand why I give and it doesn't seem to change a life, and what does it take to really take someone who is broken and bring them into a restored life? And this book can help people understand how to better do that.
Change for the Poor, ABC Books, North Glenstone. Go by, pick up a copy, and like I said, of course, Saturday, the book signing, 10 to 1. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Hope you have a great Thanksgiving.
You too. Well,
Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed.